Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Welcome to Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. I am your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
Welcome to our celebratory 101st episode.
That's right, because as you know, 100 is just the end of one set of 100 things.
Right, that's why we didn't mention it at the end during our 100th show. It's not.
Right.
It's not. That we forgot about it.
No, absolutely not. It's just that 101 is so much more important because it is the debut of the second century
of podcasts.
Of our podcast,
of our
not like
podcasts.
Of all podcasts.
Not of all podcasts.
I'm sure there are a lot of other podcasts who have more than 100.
So we thought we'd do something a little different for this episode since it's our celebratory, self-congratulatory. Basically, we're congratulating ourselves for making it this far.
For coming this far, for working this hard. I mean, we had a baby and we kept going,
never surrendered.
we didn't give up. Everybody said, you can't do it. Everybody said, please stop.
But
people literally begged us to stop. Like, literally, like, stop. Nobody did that.
So we're gonna talk a little bit about in the second half of the show, the back half of the show, we're gonna talk about the Sawbones
us.
The Sawbones.
What you all want to hear about?
Yeah, what you want to hear about the Sawbones, like a prequel story, I guess, because today's episode is about love. So we thought in the second half we'll talk about us and how we got to where we are and started podcasting, and then in the first half of the show we're gonna talk about love. That's the topic today, right, Sid?
That's right. I know that seems like a strange medical topic.
We also have a pizza on the way, so this is like going to be the best show ever because I'm like so stoked.
And we love pizza.
We love pizza.
This is a show about our love for pizza.
Sid, what am love?
You know, that's a great question, Justin, and I don't know that I'm going to be able to answer it completely, but I'm going to do my best.
Give it your best
because
shot.
Let me just clarify. All I'm really talking about is love from like a medical perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of people not that it's not medical, but like if we get into psychiatry, psychology, philosophy, some of that isn't medical, who have a lot of things to say about love throughout time. And I'm not going to get into all that because, I mean, that's like 80 podcasts worth of information.
Fair enough.
So someone should do that podcast, but okay, not me.
What is this podcast about?
So this is just about kind of the way that through time doctors have dabbled, medical people have dabbled in the world of love, to try to figure out why, what is it something to worry about?
Well, yeah. Is it terminal?
Now we used to think that love was something divine. You know, that was the initial thought, was that whatever emotions, whatever strong feelings you have, whatever gifts you get, that they would come from the gods or God or whatever divinity, you know, that time and culture recognized.
Right.
So love was just one more facet of that. So whatever you experienced, it was something kind of outside of you.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the only reason, you know, that
Cupid.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Or just, like, or the gods were playing a trick on you, maybe. Sometimes that was it.
Yeah, trying to make you fall in love with, like, animals or, like, trees or whatever.
Right.
I didn't read that closely.
With trees?
Maybe trees. I didn't read that closely.
No, you didn't read what that closely?
Like
what book is that about?
Like, Greek and, like, the Giving Tree. It's about a kid who loves a tree.
Have you read The Giving Tree? I don't know that you've read The Giving Tree. It is not. I mean, like, he loves the tree, but let's.
He doesn't love the tree.
Let's just make that clear.
Got it.
If we go back to the ancient Mesopotamians, mm-hmm. I found this quote from that time period, and this is their description of love. And we're going to talk a lot about the idea of, like, love sickness. And so I thought this was very appropriate. When the patient is continually clearing his throat, is often lost for words, is always talking to himself when he is quite alone, and laughing for no reason in the corners of fields, is habitually depressed, his throat tight, finds no pleasure in eating or drinking, endlessly repeating with great sighs, "Ah, my poor heart," he is suffering from love sickness. For a man and for a woman, it is all one and the same.
All right. I mean, that pretty much sums it up.
There you go.
They had it figured out.
And I think that's interesting that this far back, love is described this way as like an illness. Mm-hmm. Something's wrong with you. You know, that we notice all of these like negative things, like, oh, you can tell they're in love. Look, let themselves in the corner of the field talking to no one. Especially when at the time, you know, marriage was pretty much a business arrangement at this time and place in history.
Right. You would be denied, I would imagine, a lot more, you know, your loved one was, because you would have some intended that would be arranged for you ahead of time.
Exactly. So this was a time and place of arranged marriage. Not just that, but there were marriage markets where you would like have all of the eligible women, you know, who were of marriage age, and you would just basically have all the men who needed a wife stand around. And you would have them like stand up one at a time, and it was almost like an auction. It was like a marriage auction.
Now, if I'm correct, that was only for the first season. In the second season, they put the men on stage, and one of the women who wasn't chosen the time before, who was very popular with the audience, would be the one doing the selecting. Is that correct?
Yeah, and then they took everybody who didn't get a partner and put them on like an island, like a beach, I think,
a paradise. Yeah,
yeah, for sure. Some sort of paradise. Gosh, that's sad. But yeah, so they would put them all, and they would actually put them in order of the most attractive. So the most attractive woman would be presented first, and you would expect her to go for the most money. Mm-hmm. And then you would go on down the line, and actually the last few women, men may be paid to marry them, as opposed to them paying to marry the woman.
I'm with you. Yeah,
the reverse dowry. The woman's father may pay the man to take her. So I mean, if you consider that this is what marriage was, you know, you were meeting your spouse at that moment that they purchased
that
you, or that you bought
that beautiful
them.
Romantic moment when the credit card was approved and signed.
And there were all kinds of incentives too to like marry your betrothed. There were like societal incentives, like monetary pressures, and then of course like social pressures to actually like the person that, you know, you were hooked up with through the marriage market, that you actually did marry, because people did fall in love with other people. But there was a lot of money changing hands, so you weren't supposed to marry them. Although there were, I read about too, there was like a pressure on women to do like a sacrificial thing, because sex is a whole other matter here, where even after you were married, you should go for one day and sit at the temple and just have sex with anybody who comes by to like honor.
That's what that feed the birds. That's what that lady was doing. She just sat around too long and missed her shot.
Now, when we move to like the Greeks and the Romans, Galen was one of the first to write about the idea that there's like a physical explanation for love. And he based this on, you know, we've talked about the four humors before, and that was Hippocrates came up with that for the most part. And Galen thought that love is what happens when all four humors get all mixed together, which you don't want to happen.
That's
right?
Not ideal.
So the phlegm and the blood and the yellow bile and the black bile, they get all mixed up. And then you get sick. And he very much identified it as an illness. And this is this perception of love as some kind of dysfunction or sickness. This persists pretty much until the 1600s, by the way.
Well, when I would imagine it like we have a temptation as a society. We, you see it over and over again. We have this inclination to treat things that are outside of societal norms as illnesses. And I mean, you see it today with hopefully this is on the decline, but you see it with people who mistakenly perceive homosexuality, for example, as an illness. And I think that you could probably project the same thing onto here, right? If you, the idea that you would be in love with someone and it would be outside of your, like, the arranged marriage would be treated as something of a mental illness, I would imagine, because it was such an outlier.
No, that's true, because it was very much, you know, sex and love and marriage were all very separate concepts, you know, at the time. They weren't necessarily, like, we kind of assume they go together now. And back then, you would never have assumed that.
That's just because of that Frank Sinatra song, though.
Well, they don't, he doesn't sing about sex, though.
Yeah.
That would have been
he does on the, you got to get the bonus CD.
The extended version?
There's a dirty third verse where Frank gets real. There's a lot of uncomfortable rhymes, a lot of really unpleasant words.
I wouldn't advise you listening
would
to
not
it.
Advise
don't
it.
Listen
don't
to
Spotify
it.
That.
No, we can't sing it on our show. It's nope. Totally no. It's
wildly
not PG at all. But you would have married somebody for a very practical, you know, business-like reason. You may be having sex with people for a variety of reasons and not just the person that you married. And you know, this was also a time, it's interesting you say that, where having sex with a man or a woman, no matter what, if you were a man or a woman, it didn't matter. It's all whatever you know, because that was a very different thing from who you married and also who you may love. And not everybody admitted or accepted that love was something that happened.
Right.
Because when you were in love, you got sick, you lost sleep, you acted moody, your heart beat too fast. These were things that we associate with sickness.
So you said this stuck around until the 17th century. What happened then?
So we still have some people who are talking about, you know, in 1667, Thomas Willis, who's of this famous group of thinkers and smart medical people of the Oxford Circle, wrote that love sickness had nothing to do with four humors, but it was a neurological reaction that resulted from different chemicals in your body that dance along your nerves. Sometimes when you are excited by someone, when you see someone that you may fall in love with, but not everybody gets it. So like the idea that there is love sickness, but there is also a love that isn't a sickness, right?
Okay, yeah.
So some people can just be in love and they're cool. And then other people are like in love. And it's just like that's their whole thing. That's right. Their whole day.
I still know people like that.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like their whole thing. It's sweet. It's nice.
They post on Facebook a lot. People
a lot
like that.
Facebook is a good hotspot for that if you're needing that kind of content.
And the thought is that people who were too sensitive, who maybe like had a poor pain tolerance, they said would have like a high sensibility, is how you would explain
for love.
Yes, that they would fall victim to love sickness. And so it's not just like most of us can just be in love, but no, some people.
Wait, some of us know how to handle our love. We're not underneath the table, all tripped out on love.
In the 1800s. People stopped writing so much about love, and they spent a lot more time talking about sex. People got way more interested in talking about, like, what that's all about and what that has to do with, you know, who's doing what and who doesn't want to tell.
Became a lot more permissible, too, I'd imagine, not just the territory of some of your more ribald bards.
Exactly. They thought that romantic love was actually just, it was kind of a reaction in some form to sex. It was either, like, a trick to get sex or
chemically speaking they're not like crazy far off.
But it was a very cynical view of love, that the idea that all you're really after in some way is sex and that love is just somehow loosely tied to that. Maybe an unfortunate consequence of having too much sex with the same person. Then they love you and then you're doomed. You got to keep having sex with them. But not everybody agreed. I think it's interesting. There's a doctor from the time period, Dr. Ray Pierce, who wrote about lots of different things medically. But in regard to love, he said, you know, it's still important. It still matters. It's still its own entity, separate from just the pursuit of sex. But you still need to be careful about it because he thought it could cause something called mental starvation, which is basically when you redirect the flow of blood from your brain to other parts that are less important for like daily thinking activities.
Oh, all right.
So don't spend too much time in love because then you're not going to be very good at anything else, basically.
Gotcha.
So be careful with that.
Good advice.
But at least it was a defensive love. Obviously, as time has moved on, we've spent a lot of time like studying and trying to figure out what love is, what causes it. It's really an area of interest for not just doctors, but like I said, like psychologists and philosophers. A lot of people have tried to figure out like, why, what does it mean when you see somebody and you fall in love with them? What's happening?
I don't know. I'm not a scientist.
Well, in part, at least, it's chemical.
Right.
So when you look at your significant other or the person that you're going to fall in love with tomorrow, that special somebody you're going to see on the train tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
and you're just going to know in that moment. In that moment, you're going to think something divine has happened. But really, it has to do with a release of dopamine.
You know, that's among other dopamine. Things.
But one big thing is a release of dopamine from the VTA, the ventral tegmental area of your brain, which lights up and releases a ton of dopamine. And dopamine is the feel-good chemical, right? It's released when something feels good and your brain wants to remind you to do it again. Mm-hmm. So it causes elation and euphoria and obsession and longing. It's the same part of your brain that is lit up if you have an addiction to a drug and you do that drug. So you become hooked on a person. You crave them. You want more. It's the same reaction when you see somebody that you fall in love with. You also release a lot of norepinephrine, which makes you more alert and makes you more attentive, and it makes your heart race and your blood vessels dilate and all that stuff that we associate with, you know, feel like the physical sensation of being in love, you mm-hmm. know, feeling like sweaty and nervous and your heart racing and all that kind of stuff.
I gotcha.
There's a lot of other chemicals involved in this. There's like oxytocin, which we associate with like milk production and breastfeeding and contractions of the uterus and all that kind of stuff. Is also released when you like cuddle or touch somebody that you love, and it makes you want to cuddle them and be with them more. Your sex hormones, estrogen, testosterone, and endorphins all play a role. Which is all very cool, but why? What's the point?
I don't know. Songs? Sell greeting cards? I don't know. I got nothing for you.
I mean, if the whole point was just
It didn't need a point. It's just like, great. It's like a great thing that happens.
But why have we developed this evolutionarily? I mean, like, why is this something that humans do now? I mean, because this is still a question, like, because it goes beyond just the drive to procreate. Love is not just that.
I think it's because the world is hard. And I think that we are drawn to the idea of having someone else who's going to go through it with us. That's what I think.
I think that's beautiful, but it's not very scientific. It might be an evolutionary advantage because
that's like a fancy pants way of saying my thing.
No, because this is very like it. We have been selected. Like there is a selective pressure on us that those of us who love survive, and those of us who don't.
Preach it, sister. Right there. There's a Gladys Knight song about that. Let me sing it to you. Hold on.
No. There's also didn't Don Henley once say, love will keep us alive? Do you want me to?
Are the survivingest people in the world.
I was going to sing you some Eagles because I know what a fan you are.
You know, I'm solid on that. I'm good on that front.
So the thought is that if you're romantically attached to whoever your partner is that you decide to raise children with, not necessarily the person that you created the children with, but whoever you are, you know, going into the child rearing experience with, if you love them, if you're romantically attached to them and not just like a partnership, like, hey, I think we'll do this like business deal. We'll do this thing together. You're more likely to stay together, mm-hmm. right? If you love the person. And it's easier to raise a kid when there's more people to help out.
Amen to that.
So there's a lot of thought that the romantic love creates couples and family units, that a couple is the basis of a family unit, and humans thrive in family units. And so it's advantageous. Also, if you love your partner that you are creating your family unit with, you may be more likely to be monogamous, maybe not. But this also limits the spread of sexually transmitted infections, which is an evolutionary advantage as well.
Sydney, that was the most beautiful thing I've ever heard.
Really?
Let's go to the billing department. The medicines that escalate my
The dopamine is flowing.
The dopamine's flowing. Speaking of dopamine, Sid, we're going to take the last 10 minutes to just tell you how we got here. Because it's our 101st episode, celebration, self-congratulatory episode.
So this is a story. The story of Justin and I is a story that has its ups and downs. It's very sad at first. It starts with Justin breaking my heart. Would you like to share that part of
our
story?
I'll start with that part. The other thing about this beautiful story is that it will be at most 10 minutes long because the pizza has arrived. Whoop, whoop, whoop. Pizza alert.
And when you've been married this long, you love pizza a lot. Not more than your spouse, but a lot.
A lot. So, yeah, Sydney and I met when we were doing a community theater production of The Wizard of Oz.
That's right. I was Girl of Oz number 3.
I was Lord Growly. I was the guy who welcomed at the door, horse of a different color. That line's not in the show, but like I was that guy.
Right.
That was me.
Yeah.
We met there.
I was 12.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Something like that. 12. And I would have been 14 or so.
Yeah. That's about right.
So we didn't actually date, quote unquote, date then. We didn't date for another year or so. I was stage managing a production of Charlotte's Web for also for the same children's theater. And
I was on the crew.
Sydney was my assistant stage manager, if memory serves.
Did you make me assistant stage manager?
Yeah, I promoted you. I don't know if I remember to tell you or not, but congratulations in retroactively.
Now, you may remember what it was like to date when you were 13 and 14 or whatever. For us, that manifested as, so we talked a lot backstage about all the movies and books and TV shows that we liked.
Mm-hmm.
And you came over to my house, and we played, Monopoly on the computer. And we would call each other in the evenings and watch Space Ghost Coast to Coast while we talked on the phone.
That's true.
Are those the high points? Did I miss any of
those? Those are the high points. And then I messed it up because I went to church camp. I didn't tell Sydney I was going. Listen, I have no excuse. I was an idiot child. I didn't know how relationships worked, but I didn't even know I'd messed up until I got back. And
I was crushed. It was like 2 weeks.
It was bad. So
it was like 2 weeks. He didn't call and I didn't know where he was. And I called his house and there was no answer. And
I have no excuse. But
so I didn't know what happened. And so I thought I got dumped and I cried to my friends and I was very hurt and very sad because everything was going so well.
Yeah.
With the Space Ghost and all.
When I got back, I asked her to homecoming and she said no. End of relationship. Done. Dunsky. That's the end of Justin and Sydney. No more relationship for them, I bet.
And then a lot of time passed.
Like
high school passed.
10 years?
That was my freshman year of high school, and we got together the end of my junior year of college, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, so that long. Not 10 years.
Not 10 years, but a good chunk of time when we didn't see each other.
That's right.
I mean, we lived in the same town, so we would like bump into each other from time to time, but like... We weren't, like, hanging constantly.
No, the only reason that we started running into each other a lot again is because we had a mutual friend, Michael Beck.
Michael Beck. Hi, Michael. Yeah. He's not listening.
He doesn't listen to our show.
Hi, Michael.
Yeah. We're going to make him feel bad about it now.
Yeah.
We ended up having a mutual friend, kind of accidentally, you through the theater department, and him and I were in the same scholarship program.
Yep.
And we started going to the same parties and kind of seeing each other.
Not seeing.
No,
we
just like
see each
like,
other.
Like, hi, how are you? What's going on?
So then we were at a bar called Banana Joe's Island Party.
Yes.
Banana Joe's Island Party, which hysterically, there was a crappy club that opened next door that called itself Pineapple Tom's Peninsula Bash, which is still the funniest thing that's ever happened in my entire life.
Banana Joe's is no longer Banana Joe's, sadly.
It's Whiskey Rocks, is
the
name
of it now?
Yeah,
I think it's Whiskey Rocks. It was Silver something for a while. It's been a lot of things. Anyway, we were there. I was pretty freshly single.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a month single or less.
And we started dancing, and we're on the dance floor just getting down.
Justin has moves.
Oh, man, I'm a funky dude.
We both had enough drinks in us
that we
thought we both had moves.
Very good at dancing. And speaking of moves, I said to Sydney, you know, when we dated the first time, we never kissed, and I think we should rectify that. What's up? My last move. Like a marathon runner throwing himself across the finish line. I used up my last move to secure my wife.
It was very smooth.
It was the last one I ever had. The last one in the tank.
I fell for it. Hook, line, and sinker completely. Now, to be fair, I had made it easy for you because I saw you and I wanted us to hang out. And so I did the classic, I don't know. Everybody does this. Like, I wanted you to talk to me and I wanted to make it easy. So I wandered over to the bar by myself.
It wasn't easy.
I separated myself from the pack.
Hey, listen, it wasn't easy. Okay.
It wasn't intimidating.
Yeah. Is there more to tell in between then and like, then we got married? Like, we just didn't break up. That's all you have to do, right?
Well, we didn't break up, but, I had no intention of us being as serious as we were. Yeah, we both said that.
We didn't pay close enough attention.
I said, listen, you suave dude. Listen, Romeo.
Cool Rider.
I'd been in a long relationship and I needed to be free and I'm not looking for anything serious. So we've known each other for a long time. We had a lot of fun together. When we were younger, we can have some fun. But I'm not looking for anything serious, okay?
And then we, dated for 2 years?
Yeah, do you remember we dated for a month pretending like it wasn't serious?
Yeah, and then we just kind of, gave in to...
Well, then you told me you love me.
I did. Well, I did.
Yeah.
This is getting too personal.
I don't think that's too personal. You told me you love me a month in, and I already knew I loved you. Do you remember I've told you this before, when I knew the moment that I knew I loved you.
Mm-hmm. I'll never forget.
You've forgotten, haven't you?
Never. I just said never.
Well, when
it's
was
too
it?
Too personal to talk about on the podcast.
Okay, yeah. You jerk. I've told you this before. The moment I knew I loved you, this isn't very romantic in retrospect. We had gone out to a local karaoke bar, Sharky's. Mm-hmm. And before we went out to have some beers, we had some coffees.
Right.
And that is a mistake, friends.
Yeah, that was a terrible mistake.
Don't have a belly full, especially the way Justin makes coffee, because I was drinking your coffee back then. So it was sugary, sweet, creamy coffee deliciousness. Stuff. And I drank a big old cup of that. And then we went and we were drinking Miller Lite. And two beers in, I was like, my stomach does not feel good. Yeah. I have coffee and beer all swishing around in there. And so I went and sat outside, and you came and sat outside with me, and you put your arm around me, and we were sitting outside on the sidewalk outside of Sharky's. And and I knew I loved you. I don't know why. I don't know what happened. It was dopamine, I guess. Blame the norepinephrine.
I knew sooner, 20 minutes before that, just for record. I know you knew you loved me, but I knew sooner than that, so...
When you saw me turn green in the bar, and it looked like I was
while some dude was singing "Country Road Take Me Home." So then we got married after that, and Sid was doing her residency, and I started doing the podcast thing. And we decided we wanted to record a podcast. We started with as kind of a goof. We would do these there's this thing, Audio Boom. I think it's called Audio Boom now. I don't think anybody uses it, really. It's kind of like a micro-podcasting thing where we would do these point-counterpoints. You remember point-counterpoint?
Yes, yeah, I do.
We would just talk about, we would disagree about something on the couch, and we'd be a few drinks in, and we'd think, oh, this is funny. Let's just put this on Audio Boom. Let's do a point-counterpoint. Mm-hmm. And it would be me and her just, passing the phone back and forth, arguing our point. I can't remember what...
I don't remember any of them. Are they out there?
Probably somewhere in the ether. After that, we decided, after one of these, we were like, you know what? I got the podcast we should do. I don't remember how we freaking came to this. I cannot fathom it.
My parents were always telling us that we should watch 2.5 Men.
Yeah.
Always. They were constantly like, there is this show. It's called Two and a Half Men. It's amazing. You have to watch it. And we were like, we're not going to watch 2.5 Men.
But then Ashton Kutcher came on, and it was just so bizarre. It was like a very bizarre time in American history, if you're listening to this, after the fact. It was a very bizarre time where we let go of Charlie Sheen as a collective and welcomed Ashton Kutcher onto to 2.5 Men. And we thought it would be – we just thought it would be hysterical to do a 2.5 Men fan podcast by two people who hadn't watched until – Ashton Kutcher joined the show.
I also thought it might be a little bit infuriating to anybody who really loved the show. Like, I was kind of poking at my parents with it, because, like, we only joined on after, I guess, it wasn't as good. I'm assuming. It had to be better before that, right?
So, we did this podcast, which was beautifully titled Losing the Sheen, which is a really, really good name.
That was mine, by the way.
It was excellent. And then we decided to branch out into other TV shows. We did a show called The Satellite Dish with Justin and Sydney we did, like, bunch of episodes of that, right?
Yeah, a lot. Episodes. Until we finally got to a point where we could not watch television all the time.
We were watching stuff just to, like, have something to talk about and on the show, and, like, it was just bumming us out. We were watching TV constantly. Yeah. We felt like we, like, had to keep up with it.
So we abandoned that because we just could not. I mean, I like TV.
Another great name, by the way, The Satellite Dish, because every episode I would ask Sydney for TV gossip, which she never had because she didn't follow TV gossip. I would say, "Sid, give me that dish. Give me the dish."
What I had to do was go seek out TV gossip. Hated that. Great. I was just like, so now we have an Entertainment Weekly subscription forever.
So we gave up on that, and then we got then we were sitting at Black Sheep. Talking mm-hmm. burritos, which if you ever come to Huntington, that's the place that I usually recommend people go. It's good stuff. But we were sitting at Black Sheep Burritos talking about, like, what our next podcast would be, and you had avoided the medical stuff for so long because you get into some weirdness with, like, giving people medical advice, and I mean, that's why we have the disclaimer at the beginning, because, you know, you don't want to misconstrue any of that as, like, actual medical.
Exactly. There's a lot of legal issues with that, and I just don't, you know, I don't want to go down that road.
So we adapted it to be about medical history, because that's in the past, so you can't really, you know, get any tips that way. You can't take that as advice. We're literally making fun of people for doing bad things.
We explicitly tell you not to drill a hole in your head. So, yeah.
And that's how we got to where we're at. And now we're 101 episodes in, believe it
that's
or not.
Right.
I know.
And we had a baby.
Yeah. And we moved. We have done a lot in addition to the podcast.
And we're still in love.
And hey, as a side note, thank you to everybody who has been so supportive of the show in these past 101 episodes now. It has really meant the world to Sydney and I.
Yeah, it has. Thank you so much when you send us emails and messages on Facebook and tweets, and we don't always get to mention everybody, and we don't get to do all the topics you suggest, and we don't always get to respond to all of them, but it really means a lot. I read everyone, even if I don't always respond. I promise you, I read everyone.
She's terrible about responding. She'll read me the sweetest emails, and I'll say, "Did you respond?" And she's like, "No, I don't know."
That is not what
Screw that guy.
No, that is basically not what I say. I'm usually like reading them
mid nursing or something.
Yeah,
yeah.
But it really means a lot.
Yeah.
I love hearing from you guys. I love your stories.
And thank you for reviewing the show and subscribing to the show and sharing the show and everything. It really has meant the world to us. So thank you so much. We're going to keep going. I think we should keep doing it. Don't you?
Yeah. I mean, we kind of have to at this point.
Yeah, basically. I don't know how
we sold out.
So. I don't know how we'd fill the time. You know, we're just sitting around darning our stockings. We got
nothing else going on.
Got nothing else cooking. Sid, one of the constants of Sawbones since Ep 1 is that we've been a part of the Maximum Fun Network, and it is a great family of podcasts. There's a ton of good stuff on there. It's all at MaximumFun.org waiting for you. I'd list some shows now, but again, a pizza.
So just go check them all
just
out.
Just go listen to them all. None are about pizza. Not this pizza.
I don't know. There may be one about pizza.
There may be about a podcast.
Like, occasionally about pizza.
I literally did an episode of My Brother and Me that is just about Totino's Pizza. So, yes, there are pizza-centric content on the website.
You love pizza as much as we do.
Thanks to the taxpayers for letting us use their song Medicines as the intro and outro of our program. Go buy all their stuff. Last warning, we are going to be in Portland, Seattle, and Vancouver this weekend. Tickets to Portland are already sold out, but we're going to be in Seattle on Saturday night and Vancouver on Sunday night. Tickets are available. It's a show with My Brother and Me. Tickets are available at bit.ly/MBMBAM Seattle and bit.ly/VanMBMBAM.
So you should come out to the show. It's going to be fun. We're going to be there. Charlie's with us, and my little sister Riley, Aunt Cool.
Yeah, it's going to be her birthday during the Vancouver show.
Yeah, so, you know, wish her a happy birthday. Bring her cupcakes. She's turning 15.
You
so
don't need to bring her cupcakes.
Get her, huh?
You don't need to bring her
no,
cupcakes.
No, you don't have to bring her cupcakes. I mean, unless you want to. If we they're great, and bring me one, too.
We wouldn't
I mean,
let her eat to. Baked goods. At some like, your parents aren't trusting us with their life. We're not going to let her eat baked goods that some stranger made. That's like 101.
I trust our fans.
Would you trust our fans to feed Charlie? No. It's just because it's Riley. It's not your kid.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Make her like, do you know how to make like those bracelets, like friendship bracelets?
That's going to do it for us, folks. Thank you so much for joining us for this past 100 episodes. Until next Wednesday, I'm Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.